Okay, kiddos, take out your manuscript and read along with me. My life story since I remember to my 80th birthday. I was born August 12, 1883 in a little town in Dębica. At that time, Austria-Poland, under Kaiser Franz Joseph I. I went to grammar school in Dębica, but I could never finish. I was always left back because since I remember, I helped at night my father in the bakery shop. At school, I was tired and sleeping instead of listen or hear to the lesson. I slept. Therefore, I could never get out grammar school. My parents had a bakery and a seltzer factory. One episode I remember how I became a full-fledged baker. Until that time, I was only helping my father in the baking. The seltzer factory was located in a different part of the city. Once a week in winter, my father, after working with me the whole night in the bakery, had to go to the seltzer factory. To prepare seltzer should last for the whole week. In summer, the seltzer place was open every day. It was before Easter. The weather was very cold. Father came home way late in the evening. Beside me, we had one baker working for us. This man only could something the dawn. Making up the bread, he could not. I was too young, between 12 and 13 years old, but I watched my father making up the rye, bread, and also other things, but pretzels, bagels. The man finished making the dough. It has to rise about 1 hour before making up to bread. In the meantime, father was sleeping. The leaving garters was next to the bakery, in fact, the next room. I fired the oven. We used wood for heating, and when the dough was ready, well raised, I went to work. Father, but he was so tired and frozen from the work in the seltzer factory, I couldn't wake him up. Then I told the man, let's start and try to make up the rye, bread. At first you have to round up the pieces, dough, according to weight. Some 2 pounds, some larger, then long loaves is formed and the round pieces done. We made up the bread already. I prepared the oven. I went in again to wake father. It was impossible to wake him up. So I said to the man, I'm going to try to do the bread in the oven. And I did so. This took time. In the meantime, father had a good sleep. So he wake up, I suppose, he heard us working. He comes into the bake shop, looks in the oven. The bread is baking nicely. He was smiling and asked me why I didn't wake him up. Since then, I became a full-fledged baker and worked at home until I was 20 years old. At 20 already, boy, got to go to the Army. Each year in March, the Selective Service Commission sends in a committee of 8 to 10 men, also a doctor for examination. And who is healthy, of course, he is taking in the Army. But the Jewish boys didn't like to go in the service for 3 years. Most didn't. The parent, like their sons, should be soldiers because eating non-kosher, working on Sabbath, not davening, not tefilling. So there was a remedy for this.
Laying tefillin.
To bribe the doctor with a couple hundred kroner. For this purpose, there was also in each city a man who was in contact with the doctor from the Selective Service. In some time, the boy must have examined of a failure in order to get free from the Army. For me, the man who was to go between the doctor and my mother, she was the one wearing the pants in our family, the man is going to make my leg swollen, and the guaranteed minimum 2-3 days I get through with the Selective Service Commission, my legs will be as before. Sitting on a table, also sleeping on it for 14 days with my legs hanging down, my feet got swollen so that I couldn't stand on them. So round was the soles of my legs. After the 14 days, I appeared before the commission where my bribe doctor was also there, and he examined me and called out, feet swollen, and a lieutenant as the secretary of the commission writes all those things. Stopped to ask the doctor, what sickness could cause the swelling of my legs? And the answer was heart trouble, lung trouble, etc. One of the majors, which was with the commission, called out, it could also be from self-doing that job. They all broke out in laughter. In a while, the lieutenant asked, what is to be done with me? And my doctor recommended to sending me to a military hospital to a higher doctor for examination and to hear their opinion. I come to this hospital in Jeshev, the Stabsarzt. He is the highest doctor, put me in an orthopedic table and starts to examine my legs and asked me who was the one to make my legs swollen. I answered him, I never heard such things, that legs could be made to be swollen. This doctor got so mad, he starts screaming, "Jews, swindlers," and all kinds of cursing words. I was laying still and let him run around and hollering. When he quieted down a little, he stepped to the table where I was lying and whispered to me, telling me, "Who made this to you?" I said that you should be free from the army. I told the doctor I never heard that legs could be made to be swollen. I told him I was working in Krakow as a waiter. Long hours, so my legs got swollen. The doctor ordered to give me a bath, put cold compresses on my legs, put rubber bandages around. I was so tired from not sleeping in a dozen lead in a decent bed for a long time. They put me in a bed and I fell asleep. And in the morning when the doctor comes to visit his patients, he came to my bed and test my legs. Of course, lying in bed, my legs swollen started to disappear. He calls out, "Aha! See, they got better," and told the attendant to keep on with the compresses. At night, I remembered when I am in bed to hang my legs out the bed, so I slept the whole night. In the morning, when the doctor and the orderly came to visit him, he also came to me, and he takes off the bandages, looks at my legs, and the legs are swollen again. So he cries out, "What the hell is this? His legs are swollen again." One day, my doctor comes to me and says, "Goldfarb, to me, you could tell. Who is the one made you those swollen legs?" I look at him, "Doctor, what makes you think that someone made this? I was working as a waiter and this would happen to me." After keeping me for 5 days, the military started recommend me to the civilian something in Zhesev, like to the governor from the state. And the commissar tells me, "Goldfarb, I could have you take up for 2 weeks until the commissioner will meet and hears again. But if you promise me you will come back in 2 weeks, I will let you free to go home." Of course, I told him I will be back in 2 weeks, and he let me free. I went back to my hometown. The next day, my parents and that man, who was the go-between, the doctor and my parents, had a conference together. The doctor was more in favor that I shouldn't appear this time before the commission, only come in 2 years later. So when worse came to worse, there could be only take me in the reserves, but not in the regular army for 3 years, only for 2 months. This was in June 1904. I went with my mother to Krakow to talk to a man who he has contacted with the secret of police in order to smuggle me to the border to Germany. On the train station in Krakow, before the train leaves for Mislowitz, this is the border to Germany, dictators come up to ask for passports. Come up to ask for passports, other traveling documents. Of course, I didn't have any. Think to school, but the man, his name was Keller, he also told me the boat tickets to America. He provided me with a jam in my neck, and the detectives start in the train to ask for passports, all the people. When they come to me, he looked at my pin, which I had in my tie, and passed by. This is how I got out of Poland.
Pin.
Coming into Mislowitz, this was German border city, getting out the Polish train, there was a German Schander asking for passports, so he comes to me, of course. I didn't have any documents, and he looked at me and noticed the pin in my tie, and he passed by and didn't bother me at all. I took a German train to Hamburg. In the train, I met a lot of young men, also traveling, and when we got more friendly, we started to ask each other where we're traveling and from where, and it was between us a lot. Men deserted from the Russian army in 1904 was the Russian-Japanese war going on, and a lot of the Jewish boys deserted. They all wanted to go to America at that time, and I also told them my story, and so we came to Hamburg. In Hamburg, we had to wait about 3 days for the boat. My mother gave me a deposit in Krakow. This Keller and I was supposed to have the rest and to Hamburg to the Agand. It didn't come. All my friends went to the depot to be shipped with a small boat to the waiting large boat in Cuxhaven, from where the boat Pennsylvania bring us to Ellis Island. I was left until the rest of the money was sent to the Agand, and about 1 hour later they called me that the money arrived and rushed me to the depot, and I met the whole bunch of boys there. About 1 hour later, a bunch of policemen came in the depot, maybe 200 of them, and two lines of them, and gave us orders to pass between the two lines to the boat and have the passports or traveling documents ready to be examined. Near the entrance to the boat was two civilian-clothed detectives to examine all passports and other documents. When it came to me, I had only the ticket holding in my hand and gave him this. And he said to me, this is a boat ticket. I need a passport or other travel documents. And he told me, you wait here, said this detective. And he put me in back of the line on his side near the boat was. I only had with me a very small little valise, which it was near me on the floor. I was waiting about 5 minutes, and soon I saw the detectives was busy with the others. I put up my little valise and walked with the crowd straight to the boat. Soon I came on the boat. I ran downstairs deep in the boat and hiding until the boat left, and this is how I sneaked out from Europe. The Pennsylvania traveled 12 days to America. I went steerage. This was way down in the boat. 1 out of 10 passengers got a ticket for getting food, and the food contained for breakfast hot water. We've been getting a little. Each one had his own tea, and we got some bread for lunch, herring and potatoes and the skin, each person a herring. We went on the deck of the boat and sat down on the floor, and so we ate our lunch, and we got again a kettle hot water, and we made tea, and we had our own sugar. Some of us had lemons, and so we traveled. July 28, 1904, we arrived in New York. We've been taking with a ferry boat to Ellis Island. My mother had her 3 brothers. She gave me a loan. Uncle Jack Briller's address. I also had with me one of my cousin's addresses, and also the address of our last friend and neighbor address from Europe, which they left our town in 1901 with the family. I had plenty of time in Hamburg waiting for departure to America, so I wrote to my uncle in Brooklyn that I'm coming with this and this boat. He should kindly take me out from Ellis Island. I also wrote to cousin Dave Goldfarb, the same, and also to my landsman, their name was Weissman. Leaving Hamburg, I had with me $2. With this, I came to Ellis Island. If I would have $25 to show in Ellis Island, they would let me free, but I only had $2, so I had to wait until my Uncle Jack Briller will come to get me out the first day. Mr. Weissman came, and he had with him his bank book, and he showed $1,000 to take me out there. The inspector called me. If I know this Mr. Weissman, of course I recognized him, and the inspector took in his report that I did send from Ellis Island a telegram to David Goldfarb, my cousin. So the inspector insisted that only David Goldfarb should come. I was in Ellis Island for 3 days and nights until Dave Goldfarb took me out. And with him was my landsman, Weissman, which he took me to his home and gave me a bath and gave me his son's suit to put on and took me to the barber for a haircut and shave, and there gave me a fine dinner. And then Weissman told his son, which he was in the same age as I was, to take me to Uncle Jack Briller's, where he had a shop in Elizabeth Street, New York. About 300 people was working there. And my way to Uncle, my friend said, you know, your head looks terrible. Have you any money to buy a hat? All I had left was $1, so we went in a hat shop, and I got a derby for the dollar. Coming up to Uncle's shop, he wasn't there. In about 10 minutes, he came in. Also in the shop was working Uncle's brother, as an operator, and also a cousin, a girl by the name of Anne. She was a buttonhole maker, and we was standing and talking, and Uncle Jack come in, and although he seen me waiting for him, but he went through, and he come to me, and I told him who I am, of course, and greeted him nicely. All of a sudden, he asked me what make me come to America. If I think that here lays gold in the streets, I told him about the army, and I left Poland, and he got mad and answered me, why here in America, everyone enlisted in the army to serve his fatherland. I really got upset with his attitude against me and told him, Uncle, I only came to you to bring greetings from mother to you, and I didn't come to ask for anything of you. I am young, willing to work, and there's so many millions of people here. Whatever the others are doing, I find something to do. So he asked me, if you are so smart, did you bring a lot of money with you? And I answered, of course, I have $25 with me. I didn't even have $0.01 with me. And I went with my landsman's son home, and he said, Alter, I was glad at the answer you gave Uncle Briller. The uncles didn't see me for about 3 years. I tried to get a job in a bakery, and I couldn't get one, and the Weissman's was very good to me. There were 5 girls and 3 boys in the families. 3 girls and the older son was working in the needle trade, and the old man was working as a cigar maker. One girl, Ida, my sister's friend, always gave me a couple cents pocket money, but I was unhappy because I couldn't get any job. On the corner of Norfolk Street in Houston was...
Houston.
Was the owner was a cousin of the Weissmans, and I used to go in there once in a while, and he asked me if I was still not working, and it was September already. I owed the Weissmans for about 3 months' board at $3 a week, and I was miserable. And one day I went to see the Weissmans' cousin, and he told me there's a lot of advertisements in the Jewish paper, the Tug. At that time, the paper was located in East Broadway near the Forward Building. The Weissmans' cousin told me to go there, and seeing the paper goes out about 1 p.m., get a paper and look for a job in a grocery. There's a lot for gross boys needed in stores, and I found this place to get a paper. It was a big line of boys waiting already. Until I got my paper, I watched the other boys and how they grabbed the paper and ran, and then where they saw in the ads and answered, street number needs a boy, and they ran and got the job. Until I came there and until I find the street, I was too late. The next day I said to myself, I must get a job today. Around 10 a.m. I was the first one waiting in line to get the Tug block. 1 p.m. I grabbed the first paper, and running a couple of blocks, I opened the paper and looked for the nearest ad for a boy needed. The nearest was 2nd Avenue and 2nd Street. I ran in the store asking for the job, and I got the job. The wage is $6 monthly with board, and the language I didn't know, only Jewish. It was a small store. They only handled bread, potatoes, and onions. The boss gave me a job to pick over the new potatoes from a barrel to another. At night, closing the store, the owner said, showed me where I could sleep. He had in the back of the store one room, a storage for potatoes and onions, and he locked me in this room, and I slept on the bags of potatoes the whole night. But I was so happy I got this because I wasn't happy to go, and I owed the Weissmans about $24. On the first job, I only worked 2 weeks. Then I got a better job in another store for $8 monthly, but a fine family in 8th Street near Avenue C in the 2 weeks at my first job. I learned a little about the grocery, and this new job was more busy. I had to attend to the breakfast customers to deliver milk in the morning, and each customer left their milk can. One and two got some very little 3 gallons. I had to bring up milk on the 6th floor. The store was open from 5 a.m. until 10 p.m. Saturday, one half day, but I liked the job very much. I worked there a nice couple of months, and I paid off my debts to the Weissmans. One day Saturday, I visited one neighbor from home that lived in Rivington Street, and I met their landsman, a boy, who worked also in a grocery store, and he asked me how much I'm getting a month. Of course, I told him, and he also knew the conditions those small stores given to the boys. So he sent me to a man, a landsman of ours, and he was in the paper and twine business. He is coming to better stores, selling something, and so he will get me a good job. I went to see the man, and he really got me a job for $15 monthly on 94th Street at 3rd Avenue. I went there and got the job. The store was a very large store with all kinds of canned goods, a beautiful store on the shelves. His name was Firestein. Until 8 a.m. he was with me attending to the breakfast, and then his wife came down to attend the store with me. Mr. Firestein had a horse and wagon, and he went away. He went every day to Washington Market and bring back a truck full of eggs and butter. He also had an egg candler, and Mr. Firestein had a butter and egg group. The first day I ran in plenty of trouble in the store where I worked downtown in 8th Street. I was very good because there the most we carried was bread and vegetables and milk for 2 cents paper and 2 cents salt or half a measure of sour cream or for 2 cents cheese. But here there is a store with all kinds of canned goods and all kinds of cereal, and I was lost, but I used to keep the place clean, and the floor was standing in a line, bushels, and one half bushels and one quarter bushels of potatoes, and the floor was oiled every day. I started to keep the store clean, and I realized Mrs. Firestein had a tough job with me the first day. Mr. Firestein came from the market. Soon he back in the truck, and I unloaded the truck, and I saw through the window while I was unloading the truck. Mrs. Firestein was mad and talking to Mr. Firestein, but I went on and did what I could. The second day I was much better, and I got something besides I had a big breakfast route to attend. The store was also open from 5 a.m. till 10 p.m. I had to wash and keep clean about 30 old sacks of milk cans to have them ready for the morning delivery. The only thing, they had a fine home and they had a cook and I had a fine room for myself. In the end of my first month working there, Mr. Firestein gives me my pay and says to me, Jack, the first couple days when you started to work for me, I surely thought I'd have to send you away. You was green in this line.
Green in this line.
My wife had a hard job and insisted to send you away. I told her to give you a chance, another couple of days, because I saw you are willing to learn and that you are not lazy. And I'm glad I didn't make no mistake. For the next month, he raised my wages to $18 a month, and I was working there for 2 years. I advanced in my work, and they got me another boy to help me, taking out the orders to deliver, and also to deliver the breakfast to the customers. I and Mrs. Firestein attend to the trade. Of course, I dressed very nice, and the only time I had for myself was Sunday, one half day, because at that time, most of the grocery stores opened until 12 a.m., until the store really closed was 1 p.m., and then we all sat down to have dinner. Until I came downtown to the Weissman's was 3 p.m. I was so tired from this hard work, which I didn't file, whom I was working. Soon I came to the Weissman's and there had a supper there. I stretched out and fell asleep. About 9 p.m., the Weissman's waked me up to go home to sleep. The uncles, I didn't hear from them, and I wasn't anxious to know about them. Once before the high holidays, one day I was busy in the store, and Uncle David Briller walks in and he says, "You told me we wouldn't find you. Here I am." He says, "Jack, Uncle Jack gave your address where you are and wants you to come to spend Rosh Hashanah with him." I didn't care to see them at all, so I told Uncle Dave that the store is open on those days and I will not be able to come. He couldn't believe that in the such high holidays the store is going to be open, and he asked Mrs. Firestein if the store is really going to stay open on those high holidays, and she was smiling, and her answer was, "We will be closed." After a long time pleading with me that already one is anxious to see me and that they heard so much about me, so I had the promise to come, but I only came to visit them once in 6 or 7 months. I was working for the Firesteins for 2 years, and I was very tired. The week of July came out on Tuesday. I asked Mr. Firestein a little vacation in order to have a good sleep, and I wanted, when I leave Sunday p.m. after closing the store this week only, I should come back Wednesday after July 4th. Firestein asked me who was going to attend to the breakfast. I told him in plain, "I got to have a little rest. I want to go to the Weissman's and sleep plenty. I don't go nowhere, only resting Tuesday nights." I went back to 94th Street and I had my key to my room. 5 a.m. I come in the store and Mr. Firestein tells me, "Jack, as long as I could get along without you those couple days, I will try to get along for more without you." I packed my things, got paid, and went to the Weissman's. I remind myself I had a friend, a baker, who worked for us in Dembitsa. I know he works in Pittsburgh or something. I went to see him, and he was glad to see me and asked me if I would be interested to take a job. It was Pitt Street where he
Pitt
was.
Pitt Street.
Right. So he asked me if I would be interested to take a job in the bakery. There is a man needed there. I, of course, told him I would like to take the job, and I took the job, and the work was 12 hours a night, and the pay was $12 weekly. At night, four people was working, three at the something, and one foreman at the oven.
Bench.
Three at the bench and one foreman at the oven. We only baked sandwich bread for the delicatessen stores, and it was a very good job at the time. The owner was a German Jew, a very intelligent man, and all the other bakers, the man was working 15 to 18 hours daily. Very little bake shops have been unionized. I worked there from July until April 1906. The day before Passover, the boss ordered me to come to work with the day shift. When I was nearly finished to go home, I was at the oven baking sandwich bread, and I saw from far away a man comes down the stairs, beautifully dressed, and nice tall man, and asked for me, and he came near the oven, and I recognized him right away. This was Firestein's brother. I used to see him at Firestein's home, and he says, "Jack, I came to see you. We're looking for you 6 months already." His name was Eli Folt. He also was in the business in Amsterdam Avenue, Bronx. I told him that his brother could not pay me the wages I will get now. I was supposed to advance on the job as the assistant foreman, and the pay would be $15 weekly. Mr. Fat answered me, "I will get the $15 and also board," and I told him that I will take a raid to talk with his brother and take a ride to talk with his brother in the evening. Mr. Cohn from the bake shop where I was working gave me the envelope with my pay, and I came to the Wisemans where I was boarding with them, and I told them about the job I've been offered, and they told me I shouldn't change the job. Fat will never pay me those wages. In the meantime, I opened my pay envelope and found there $22. It seemed to me that Mr. Cohn gave me somebody else's pay. I went back to the bakery and told Mr. Cohn, this isn't my pay envelope. There's too much money, and he answered me, no, this is your envelope. $12 for the week's work, $3 when I was working on the day shift, and he gives me $7 for the 7 days Passover because I am not working altogether, $22. He also told me from now on my wages will be $15 a week as assistant foreman. I went to see Mr. Fott around 7:30 p.m. that night, and we had a good talk and told him I am working in a good job and I'm afraid he wouldn't be able to pay me $15 a week. And the answer was, Jack, we was looking for you since you left. The Firesteins, please come to work. You've been satisfied, I'll give you a nice home. But when I came back home to the Weissmans, they started to give me a piece of their mind. I will try to call Mr. Firestein in his store that I will not take the job, but the store was closed. I called Mr. Fott's brother, who was Mr. Firestein's brother-in-law, and I talked to him and told him he should get in touch with Paul Fott and tell him that I'm not coming to work, and he asked me why, and I told him I'm afraid to leave my job. He wouldn't be able to pay me those wages. He told me the same, that they were looking for me for months. Anyway, I told him tomorrow morning I'm not coming and to let know Paul.
That's the end of side one. Flip the disc, please.
I was invited for Easter holidays to Uncle Jack Briller's, and I was well fixed. I had beautiful cloth suits made to order. I was supposed to meet Uncle in his shops around 1 p.m. in the day before the Seder, and I come there and he was waiting for me. Uncle lived in Brooklyn in his own home.
Good. Where?
In his own home.
In his own home on Bainbridge Street?
Yeah.
Okay, continue.
Oh, it's on?
Yep.
Uncle invited some friends to the Seder, and I had my own room. We had everyone in our own Seder, and then we all went to sleep. In the middle of the night, I woke up, and it didn't let me rest, thinking, why can I try out this job in the grocery? I am off the whole week, and the bakery is closed, and I get up around 4 a.m. and got dressed and sneaked out of the house quietly and took the trolley car and went to New York. Around 7 a.m., I called up Mr. Paul Fott if he wants me to come. The answer was, come right out, and when I came out, the store was already busy already. I put on a long white coat and attend to the customers until 7 p.m., I asked Paul if he likes my work, and he was more than satisfied, and I quit the bakery. From my present, I received, from my parents, I received often letters, but not happy ones. We had 5 children, 3 boys and 2 girls, and I was the oldest, and then the girls. And one of the sisters was 18-year-old, and the other sister 16 and a half. The boys, one was 7 and the other 5 and a half when I left for America. My father got sick, so my sister had to do all the baking. And Debensa is a small town, and a baker was not to be getting there. So the sisters had to do what was only possible for them to do. The letters I received were heartbreaking to read. And once I received a letter, now they be entirely something where they had their house and their business. In front of the house was empty lot, about 250 yards by 250. And this is going to be sold, and a big building is going to be built, and they have a chance to buy a piece of that lot. So they must buy the lot so they wouldn't be living in the rear. I send them all my savings, a nice couple $100, and they build on that lot a 2-story building only for their own needs. In 1907, the Kaiser Franz Joseph I got 70 years old and gave amnesty for all the political people, and I was also one of them. And after seeing this advertised and after receiving all those terrible letters from home, I decided to go back to Europe to help my parents. I wrote my home, of course. They were very happy of my decision. Beginning of 1908, I left for home. Until the last minute, I worked for Paul Fott, and he saw me off the boat and gave me a nice present and also told me, Jack, my house is always open for you. If you desire to come back, and if you need help, just let me know. I will be glad to send for you. Coming home, I found everything a mess, and I took over everything under my supervision. I reorganized everything. I had a hard job to straighten things out. And during the day, I was occupied at the seltzer factory and at night at the bakery. We had 2 men working at the bakery, and I was not very satisfied with their doing, so I was plenty occupied. After putting up the building, although business improved a lot, I sensed that we should have nice baked goods, and we also had a nice retail business with sodas. We also took in all kinds of
candies.
My sisters attend to this, but we've been in debt, and my mother borrowed money, paying high interest. In the bakery, we hardly have any flour on stacks. Once I had a talk with my parents and told them my plans to go back to America to work and send the money home until they paid a little of their debts. And then I will come back, and the sisters was much against this. They were willing to go to America to work and send home money. In the meantime, I wrote to Mr. Fott to send me a ticket to come back to the USA. I received the ticket and money, and I was ready to come back. One day before leaving, my sister was crying so much because my leaving, I couldn't stand it, and took a walk on the sidewalk. Passing by about the sixth store from our business was a butcher store, and he was a tenant in our house, a very intelligent man. He seen me passing by, and he ran out and called me. And he asked me, isn't it true? I heard you going back to America, and I answered, yes, I am young. I'm going back, and his name was Sam Klein. He was our best friend, and he begged Mother by signing notes in the bank for loans, and he was very nice to Mother and all around. I told him the way we are situated now, it's impossible to go on, and we are short in everything. No flour for baking, and we were a lot of debt, so I decided to go back on my job in New York and send them the money. They should be able to go on with the business. And Mr. Heim answered me, Alter, when you leave, they wouldn't be able to exist. Alter, I've been with them for a couple of years since you left for America and seen how the business looked when you wasn't with them, and I see the business since you've come back, and no matter how much you send home, it wouldn't cover this. When you were running the business and he is against my leaving, I will be sorry. I told Mr. Heim, but it is impossible to go on like this. So he asked me how much money would be needed to help to be able to go on, and I told him if we could borrow it, 500 guldings, we could go on, and he told me to go home and talk to your parents to sign a note for this 500 gulden, and you got it, and don't go back. And so I had his story, and of course business was booming under my management. I worked very hard to bring the business to success.
I heard his story.
I worked very hard to bring the business to success. I have to write some reasons why business was bad. After all, we had the best business in town. The trouble was only in old-fashioned management. For instance, anyone now in seltzer business, you must have seltzer bottles. And those seltzer bottles cost about 45 cents in American money. The bottles for the soft drinks cost about 15 cents each in the factory. Every season we had to buy new bottles because it was bad management. And customers came in the store for a bottle of soda to take out. Could get the little bottle for 4 cents without leaving any deposit on it. Take a siphon bottle home. It cost only 45 cents. Could get to take home, and only when he paid 4 cents for the bottle and the soda. Lots of them took off the lids from the siphon bottles and got for it in junk about 20 to 30 cents. I told my family, this is bad business. I gave an order, who wants bottle soda to be taking out? Got to leave deposit on it, and that helps a lot. Also in the stores where they had soda, had to leave deposit on the bottles. The second battle I had was when I watched people used to come in the store to buy baked goods and then walked out without paying. I asked Mother, what's this? And Mother tells me, I saw Shmuel Schuster, that man's son, the shoemaker. He made for Father a pair of boots and the sisters
shoemaker,
clothes for Passover, so he takes out with bread rolls and challahs. I says, fine. Who writes down for how much money he takes? And the answer was, Shmuel writes down at his home. And secondly was the case with another one. The other party was also taking for years bread rolls and challahs. And I asked Mother, how is Ashheim? How long will they take stuff without paying? And Mother says she took goods for dresses for the children, also for herself, and also the same store. Ashheim writes down how much baked goods he's taking and he owes. It's from the time since I've been away for 3-pound challah weekly and 5 pounds on holidays. I had to look up on the Jewish calendar since 1904 until 1908 to find out how much Ashheim owed us for challahs alone, and I gave him a bill and I told him, I want a bill how much Mother owes him. The answer was he owes us a balance, and this is how I had to struggle in order to bring the business on a sound basis. Time went by and everything got smoothed out, and once in 1909, a man by the name of Spidler, he was a tailor, a young man at that time, he got friendly with me and we took a walk together sometimes. And he asked me why I don't get engaged, and he has a fine girl for me. In fact, she is his sister. They have no parents and an uncle, which he also has a restaurant and a wine house in Lemberg, and raised her. And she is a beautiful girl, and he would like me to see her. Lemberg from us was about 7 hours traveling. In short, we decide to meet in Jessup. The middle point of traveling. My father reminded himself he has a cousin there also in the bakery business in Jessup. As our train arrives about 3 p.m. in Jessup, And the train from Lemberg is arriving 7 p.m., so we went to our cousins to visit them. My mother was also with me at 7 p.m. We went to the train in
Jesse
with the girl's brother. After her arrived, we all went to our cousins' supper, for all was proper. But the young lady was far from being beautiful, very short, and not very well dressed. When we finished our supper, we went for a walk, and the girl asked me the result of our meeting together, and I told her I will let her know in writing, and so she went back to Lemberg. And so we thanked our cousin for all they did for us, and we went home, but our cousin and Jeshev didn't let me so ease up. I wasn't a bad-looking chap, and I kept myself neatly dressed, and once I received an invitation to come celebrate Purim with them. In the meantime, there will be a meeting a beautiful girl, which I surely would like. I could use the time to go to Purim, and I wrote them, I will come 1 week later. I arrived in Jeshev a week later, and I went to my Sarah's house. She rest in peace. And I was interested to her. She was a real beauty, and I liked her very much. And after visiting Sarah a couple of times, I told my parents I had met a girl which I like. And we worked out through my cousin, the girl has a dowry of 1,000 gulden, and this will be her gift after we will be married. The money my mother insisted to be deposited in both names in one of the banks in Dembitsa. So we did. Sarah's mother deposited the money in the bank as mother asked for, and we got engaged, and the wedding was arranged to be in March 1910, and we got married and lived together in Dembitsa in my parents' house. Our rooms were a very small room, but we've been happily married, and I was supposed to get paid 5 gulden weekly. This was equal to $1 a week. The first 2 weeks I got paid in the middle of the week, and mother asked me if I could lend her the 10 gulden she needs to buy flour, and I gave her the 10 gulden and never got back, and I didn't get any more paid. Sarah was busy in helping in the store, and she became pregnant with the first baby, and I was busy with my work. In parentheses it says, I have to go back to the time before I got married to Sarah. My sister Zelia, she was younger than me. In Europe it's a custom, the younger does not get married before the older child in the family, but my sister had a boyfriend from a little town near us, and he was really working for himself in Hanover, Germany, and they decided to get married, so I gave my sister the privilege to get married before me. And they got married, and my brother-in-law took my sister to Hanover, and about a half a year later, I got married. To be remembered, as I wrote on page 30, that my mother wanted only that the 1,000 gulden, what I'm supposed to get, the wedding gift, should be deposited in one of the banks near our town. And so it was, but there was a catch to this, which I found out later. My mother promised to my sister Bea 700 gulden, and she borrowed the amount in the bank where I had deposited my money, or better, Sarah's money. The bank book was in one of the closets, and I was too busy working to pay attention where the deposit book is. And time went by. My mother was busy always spending money on my sister in Hanover, and the younger sister Bella, she took a trip to visit my other sister in Hanover. So I saw that I could not draw after my working so hard 5 gold a week, which it was promised to me. My mother does what she wants. I decided it's no use to stay here any longer, and I try to leave my parents. I remind myself about the bank book, and I had some worries, and I was looking for it, and I asked mother where my bank book is, and I found it. I didn't care to work anymore. And once I received a letter from my brother-in-law from Hanover, there is a bakery for sale in Hanover, and I should come. Being by myself in my room, I opened the bank book and noticed there is something written in there in the book, and I started to read it and see that my money does not guarantee the 700 gulden that was borrowed from my sister. I really got upset about this and went to the store and asked my mother who gave permission to do this, and the answer was she don't know anything about the bank book. And I told mother, if so, who brought the bank book to the bank to have this written, and she told me she remembers once the bank told her to bring my bank book, but what for she didn't know. I went to see the president from the bank and told him I want my bank book should be cleared from this writing, and if he refuses to do it, I will give over to the DA and I'll see that he should go to jail. The president of the bank told me so will my mother go to jail, and after long interviewing, the bank decided to relieve me and gave me a different bank book. I wanted to withdraw my money, but according to the laws, I had to wait 6 months until I got my money. Sarah was pregnant the 7th month and receiving my money from the bank, and we packed and left Dembica for Hanover.
Dembica.
We were living in Hanover, Germany with my sister for a while, and the bakery I didn't buy, so we all decided to go to Berlin to fix up a bake shop in partnership with my brother-in-law. And this was in beginning 1911. We rented a bake shop in Stein Street, and the store and the living quarters in the Grandeur Street. My brother-in-law was supposed to look for customers. He knew Berlin well. Besides, he had a lot of his family there, and the bake shop from the store was quite a distance away. In the beginning, me and my brother-in-law was working at nights, and in the morning he took the baked goods with a punch card to the store.
Push card.
Push card to the store. At night he helped me, and he was always sloppy.
Sleepy.
So we decided it would be much better to get someone to help me in the bake shop in order to give my brother-in-law a chance to sleep nights in order to see if we get more customers. But he always slept over, and he didn't come in time to get the baked goods to the store. It came so far that he wants me to buy him out. He invested in the business 500 mark, and I invested all I had. I wanted to take over, providing he should wait at least 2 to 3 months to pay him the 500 mark, what he invested, and he couldn't agree. So we sold everything and divided the money. And I just got enough money to buy a ticket to America and to send Sarah home to her mother in Jeshub. Since Sarah came home to her mother, she gave birth to her first child and a son.
That was Benjamin.
But after a couple of months, the child died.
Yes.
His name was Benjamin. I got work in a bakery in Bayside, Long Island, and I wrote Sarah to come to me to New York, but she didn't care to come to America. She wrote to me we could make a nice living in her town. In the beginning of 1912, I came back to Jeshub to Sarah. In a couple of weeks, my mother came to visit and wanted me to come back to Dembitz to work together in the business, and she offered me 15 gulden weekly, but I wanted there should give me mortgage on the property or any other protection for my money. I sent home to them for building the two-story building, and they refused. Father says he wouldn't take it with him. Over 100 years, we all will have it. I argued, after all, I was the one worked for my money so hard in America. Why shouldn't I have it back? Therefore, I decided to open a bakery in Jeshub for myself. I rented a bakery. It took a couple of weeks to organize, and it was a big success. In 1913-14, Hilda was born. It was a New Year's Day. Business was very good. Sarah hired a wet nurse for Hilda, but in June 1914, the First World War broke out, and in November 1940, the Russian army occupied 1914. The Russian army occupied Poland. Over the whole family fled away farther inland, and we landed in Prague, Czechoslovakia.
Wow.
And there I've been taken in the army in 1915. Hilda was that time 1.5 years old, and she was a beautiful child. The money we had was running out, and besides, it was very hard to get food, and we still had the wet nurse for Hilda, and we had to let her go. In order to get a loaf of bread, one of us had to stay in line early morning or middle of the night many times. Even this didn't help. In June 1916, I been sent to Hungary, there where my division was the 14th Regiment, at that time General Brohke, B-R-O-H-K-E, through the Russian line. And
broke through the Russian line?
Russian line, and drove the Russians deep inside Russia. As usually any army does, depend on a good master outfit, their duty is to supply the army with food, clothing, and so forth. When the Russian army occupied Poland, there was a fortress in some town, and the city was taken by the Russians. And also there was the general office of the quartermasters. The Russian took them as prisoners of the war. When in 1916 the German and Austrian armies freed these territories, a new quartermaster outfit had to be built and organized, and the army was looking for bakers and butchers and millers for the quartermaster division, and it came an order to my company, a baker is needed, and I was picked to go to the town to the quartermaster's outfit, and there I worked in the back shop.
So he was a prisoner of war.
The quartermaster also had branches in other cities in Poland, and where branches was opened, I know this, and I paid a little graft to the man in the main office. When a transport of our outfit will be sent to my hometown, he should send me in there. So I've been sent to Jeshub. In the beginning, I was working as a baker in the bake shop, and then I was promoted to be the supervisor in the bakery. I had to take care of a set of 220 Russian prisoners, and we trained them to be bakers, and they did a good job. In the bakery, they had an old system of making the dough for the bread, where according to the system, the bread came out small and heavy, and it really was no good. Of course, each branch in the army had his officers. A new lieutenant was transferred to our outfit, and he was the head man from the bakery and also had charge over the flour. And the bake shop was working in 5 days a week on two shifts, day and night. Every 5 days, we used to get 300 to 400 bags of flour. And bag flour weighed 100 pounds, and each bag of flour had to give out 101 loaves of bread at 2.5 pounds each. I will return to my story about this system of producing the bread. We only been baking rye bread already. An officer should come in the bakery and to see that everything was good, and also inspected the bread. But the one officer before this new officer did never inspect the shop. As I said before, the bread was no good. I knew it, but I had no right to change the system. One day the new lieutenant came in to inspect the bread and cuts open one loaf of bread and asked me, hollered at me in anger, "What kind of bread is this? Just like that. No taste. Small." He was very mad at me. I told the lieutenant, according to the system they have here, the bread could not be any better. So he says, "If you know that the system is no good, why don't you do it your way?" I told the lieutenant I need another branch, and also give an order to the sergeant, who was the head of the bakery, to give me whatever I need to provide my system of baking. I got everything, and the next day, when the lieutenant came in for inspection, he takes a loaf of bread, cuts it open, tastes it. So he was smiling and says, "This I call bread." Of course, the lieutenant reported this to the major, and I was released from doing any work in the bakery, only to be there head man over the bake shop. The major gave me a pass to be able to stay at home overnight every day, and some days the whole day at home. I carried on doing cake baking at my bake shop, and Sarah and her sister Regina took care of the store. We made very good business. In 1917, when the Russian Revolution broke out, the Russian prisoners of war started to disappear, and each night more of them disappeared and went to Russia. We had to get Italian prisoners of war to teach them for the bakeries. In the fall of 1918, on my way to the base, I met a lot of soldiers. They were carrying altogether little wooden valises. Some of them even took their guns with them. I started to ask them where they're going, and they answered, "We're going home. The war is over." And I come to my outfit and went in the bakery shop, and no one was at work, and there was no one to ask anything, and so I also went home, and so ends the war. It dissolved by itself. In the meantime, there was no government, and the Polish army started to organize, and there was only the town government, and the Polish Jew haters started to raise their ugly heads. In a lot of Jewish towns, there were pogroms. A lot of Jewish got killed, right until a Polish government with General Pilsucki, P-I-L-S-U-C-K-I,
Pulaski,
took over and started to discipline the whole Polish government. I was an eyewitness to a case where three police was shot to death, where the high court in Rzeszów gave out the sentence. Okay.
The sentence to?
Execute those three Poles. It happened in the city of Kolbuzro, not far from Rzeszów. The Poles made a pogrom there for 2 days. They've been raping and killing. A lot of the Jewish was hiding in the cemetery, and it was not enough what those bandits robbed and did everywhere. And someone told them, three Poles, that some Jews are hiding in the cemetery, and they went there with guns there and found one boy hiding behind a tombstone. And they ordered the boy to kneel, and then they told him to empty the pockets of the poor boy. He had a couple of cents in his pockets, and they took the money and ordered him to open his mouth and shot a bullet in there. He was instantly dead. A little space away from the scene, more people hid, and they recognized the boys who did shoot the boy and heard the whole conversation, what went on before the shot the boy to death. The government said in sending the army, some army men, to keep order, and when all was under control, the people what was in hiding in the cemetery where the boy was shot to death did report to the officers that at that time what happened at the cemetery, and also the names of the boys, and they're been picked up and been sent to Rzeszów for a trial, and there was they were sentenced to be shot at once. In February 1919, Harry was born, and the business went on, but the Poles were miserable against the Jewish, and I decided to leave Poland and go to America, first by myself, and then send for my family. I went to Warsaw to the American consul and told him in English I would like to go back to the USA, and he told me to fill out the application. And so I got the visa to go to the USA. In March 1920, I came to New York on the SS Celtic from Liverpool. And arriving, I called Mr. Paul Fott, and he told me to come right away up to him. I started to work for Fott, but at that time the work was much more suitable at the bakery trade, and I left him. I became a union man in Yonkers in Local 144, but they told me at the time of the initiation that 1 year they are not responsible to give me any work. I had a landsman, a baker, which had a bakery in Long Branch, New Jersey, and this was a Sisson place. Assistant place. I got the job there and work over the assistant after Labor Day. I came back to Yonkers and got a job in the union. At that time, the wages was $57 weekly. In 1922, I went in business for myself with a partner in Yonkers. I made a success but couldn't stay with the partner. I needed $3,000 to pay the partner, and I couldn't get it. We had to sell. In December, no, it was November, George was born. And I couldn't get any rooms, and we went through a lot. I went back to work in the union, and I worked myself up to a very good job. I was a foreman and got good pay, $83 a week by that time. I worked until 1931 and then went in business with my landsman, Eli Schnapps, and we bought the bakery in Peekskill in 1938. I left Peekskill and bought a shop in Brooklyn in eastern New York. Hilda got married in 1939. In 1938, my brother came from Berlin with his family. I helped him to establish himself as much as I could. I stayed in Brooklyn until 1940 and opened the bake shop in Tampa in partnership with Hilda and Ray, and I worked very hard during the years in Tampa. I hated very much to work with Ray and Hilda, especially with Ray. We got the building in Tampa in partnership with Hilda and Ray in 1944, and Harry came home from the Army in 1945. I gave Harry over my partnership, which he drew $300 weekly, and he gave me $100. One day, Harry told me, "Pa, we decide to go back to New York. I don't like the bakery," and I asked him why you don't make a nice living here. And he said, "Yes, but I would like to study my trade," so they left for Brooklyn. I couldn't stay anymore in business with Ray and decided to sell to Judah, Tata Hanji's brother, and he was working at that time for us. For $5,000, and Hilda asked me why I don't give her this chance to buy, and she will give me $5,000 in cash. And I said if she wants the business, she is first, and gave the business to Hilda, and the stock was for $2,500. The rest you all know. Miami Beach, August 21st, 1963, Jacob Goldfarb. All right.
Introduce.
Okay, everybody.
What this is all about.
We've had an intermission, and now these are just extra letters that Pop wrote with his stories. So we finished the major manuscript of 43 pages, and we start now on page 1 that follows it. And Pop starts, "I forgot to mention what happened before I got the job in the grocery. Weissman's cousin told me, 'Why don't you try to get a job in one of the German bakeries?' He told me to get the German Staatszeitung.
And there Zeitung.
Is, Zeitung.
Staatszeitung.
There is a lot of bakers needed, and I did
German
so.
Newspaper.
And I find an ad for a baker is needed for rye bread on 6th and 50th Street. And I figured the paper is coming out at 1 a.m., so I will be the first one to get a job. And the Weissmans was living on 99 First Street. So I will walk straight to 6th Avenue to the west side. It is plenty early until I got over to 50th Street. Walking and walking, and then it started to be daylight."
From 1st Street to 50th Street.
Yep. The reason I decided to walk because I had the last 10 cents in my pocket and I wanted to spare them. But I saw it as getting late, and there I am only on 23rd Street and 6th Avenue. And I figured better to take the elevated train for one nickel, so I did. And the ad was not to be later than 6 a.m. I arrived 6:30 and the job was taken already. But the baker told me to leave my address, and if he need another man, he will let me know. And now I had left the last nickel, and I was hungry. And I am in the west side, and I was glum now how to come downtown again. And I figured to go with 50th Street and take the east side as far as 1st Avenue and 50th Street. And then I went straight towards downtown, and I passed by the slaughterhouses on 31st, 32nd, and 33rd Street, and still didn't have anything to eat. And about 5 p.m. I came as far as Rivington Street, and I was really good and hungry. and a man was peddling donuts 2 for 1 cent. And I took 2 donuts, and I had left 4 cents. I was waiting until 9 p.m., and then I went home to the Weissmans. And Mrs. Weissman asked me where I was the whole day, and I told her, and she asked me if I had supper, and I told her yes, and I went to sleep. The next day, I made up my mind. Today, I must get a job, and I got this job in the grocery for $6 a month. But I was ashamed to let Weissman know about the job I got. So I wrote a note and left it on the table, and I went on my job. About 3 days later, I was outside picking over potatoes from one barrel to the other barrel, and I heard someone call out my name, Alter, and I looked around, and yes, it was one of the Weissman daughters, and she was going home from work, and she said, I ought to be ashamed not to let know what happened with me, and they all thought that I'd taken myself in the river, that I'd thrown myself in the river. At that time, a lot of the new immigrants did so, and I should come to show myself that I'm alive, and so I did. Of course, they were very glad to see me alive. About 2 weeks later, the younger daughter of the Weissmans came to the store, and I was outside, and she called me aside to tell me that there is someone from the bakery from 50th Street, where I left my address in case a baker would be needed, to let me know the job is open, and I should come right away. And I told the Weissman girl, I am satisfied with my job and will not leave. And she told me, are you crazy? You're going to work for $6 a week when you could get much more?
$6 a month. Is it a week or a month?
$6 a week.
What did he say before? About the
I don't know, but it's $6 a week.
All right.
And she worked so much on me that I left the job and went with her to the house. And the girl from the bakery took me with her. And that was around 4 p.m. And I started to work. And this was a German bakery. And there were about 7 or 8 bakers. And the job was 7 days work for $7 a week with board. At 6 p.m., we all of us went upstairs to have supper, and we sat down, and it was served all kinds of meat, and I took a piece of bread and ate it, and one of the men noticed I don't take any of the meat, and he said to me, Goldfarb, I see you don't touch any meat. You could eat eggs. Ask the girl. She will make you some eggs for you, and I did. And we went back to our work, and we finished around 4 a.m., and we all went to sleep upstairs, and I was looking very... A couple of minutes, a train rushed by. It was hard for him to sleep because every couple of minutes a train rushed by and I could not fall asleep. Around 7 a.m. I got dressed and went down, but we had to go out through the store, and the baker asked me, where am I going? And I told him I can't sleep, so I'm going to the Weissmans to rest, and I will be back to work around 5 p.m. I come to the Weissmans, and Mr. Weissman asked me about the job, and I told him I cannot eat because it isn't kosher, and it's impossible to sleep. So Weissman says, I don't agree. You should work on Sabbath and eat treif. 7 days work. Tell the baker, without board, you should stay on the job. If not, I can't work. And I came to work, and I told the boss, I can't sleep. I want to work without board. So he told me, I will get $12 a week without board. I finished my work around 6 a.m. and got dressed, and the boss gave me a bag with baked goods, and I went to the Weissmans, had a good rest, and late around 4 p.m. I went to work. Since I came to the bakery, the boss said, Jack, I must have a man to stay with me because I never know when we start to work. And he paid me for the 2 days' work, and I left the job. I came home, and I couldn't get any job in a bakery and went to look for a job in a grocery. I got a job for $7 a week.
Continue.
Okay, that's the end of that story, and we continue now with another whole story. It's page 1 on the top. This letter was written to Hilda. It says, Hilda, this episode in my life I have to record because it is a history of the candlesticks which I gave to you for Madeline. On account of those candlesticks, I had a big trial in Zhezhov Supreme Court where it would find me guilty and I would get 6 months prison, but I only got 10 days prison. I got married March 10th, 1910, and the wedding was in Zhezhov. You may know, a wedding in Europe wasn't until Saturday after all the makantun, and of course the young couple goes to shul. The young bride has cloth to the Torah, and then the people go for Kiddush, and the whole day Saturday is, so to speak, an open house. I married on Sunday, so naturally we had to stay until Saturday. I received 2 pair of candlesticks as a gift, one from my parents and the one which I gave to Madeline, and they both genuine silver from Sarah's mother. We've been staying until over Saturday in my mother-in-law's house, and one day two civilian clothes, really dressed men, came in to collect for taxes. The mother-in-law had a butcher shop in town, so I told the man, please go to the store, she will pay you. And they said, we're not going to any store. In Europe, if a person doesn't pay his taxes, those two men have the right to take anything from the household that they like and keep it until the person pays the taxes. If a person doesn't come to the city hall to pay in 5 days, they have the right.
Right to?
They have the right to sue my two pair of candlesticks and also my mother-in-law's candlesticks was standing on the bureau, and one man, after refusing to go to the store, picks up those candlesticks, which you have for Madeline, and he starts to walk away with them, and I told him, those are mine, take the one which belongs to my mother-in-law. But mother-in-law's candlesticks wasn't pure silver, but silver covered, and the man had only an eye on my candlesticks, and he starts to walk off. So I take one of his hands out of his hands, my candlesticks, and put them back on the bureau, and he said, wait, I'll fix you, and then went away. After Saturday, we went home to Dembitza to go on with my work. About 3 months later, I received a letter from the DA for a hearing about the whole case and what happened about those candlesticks, that I interfered with this tax collector, and I pushed him and hit him. I told the DA my story, and two civilian men came in the house there and didn't identify themselves, and I told him my story, and it went back and forth from the DA in Dembitza to the courts in Jesse. And in the meantime, the story I wrote in the first pages about the troubles, the story I wrote in the first pages about the troubles I had with my parents, where I didn't like what my mother did to the bank book, and when the time came when I decided to leave my parents to go to Germany, I let know the court that when I returned to Poland, I will report to stand trial. In April 1911, I came back to New York after Sarah went home to her mother, and I wrote she should come to America, and she refused. She wrote, we don't need America. We could make a nice living here in Poland. In March 1912, I went back to Rzeszów, and when I came home about 2 weeks later, I received a summons to appear in a court about this candlestick business. I hired an attorney, and the trial was in Supreme Court in Rzeszów by three judges. And as I mentioned before, two men came in mother-in-law's house in civilian clothes, and there asked for Lena Kleinmutz, and I told them she is in her business, and I told them where. But they refused to go there, and they wanted to take my candlesticks, which I just got as a gift from the parents. And I showed to them the pair of candlesticks which belonged to Lena Kleinmutz. And
actually, the tax collectors were there for the Kleinmutzes.
Yes.
Not Pop.
No,
that's why
for
Pop,
his mother-in-law.
That's why Pop didn't want to surrender
his candlesticks. Right. So then they said, well, this is the man who comes to collect for the taxes. Of course, I refused to give them my candlesticks. And my attorney also was there. But my attorneys point out that they was dressed in civilian clothes. And the rule was in Poland that these must be dressed in his uniform. And one of the judges asked the man, why didn't he wear his uniform? And his answer was, he went early in the morning to the well to get some water, and his hat fell in, and it was wet, so he had to put on a civilian hat. And they asked him why he didn't wear his uniform, and his answer was, he had his uniform on underneath his top coat. And the decision was 10 days hard labor. And I wanted to appeal the case, but my attorney said I shouldn't, because they're a bunch of anti-Semites, and that they could reverse my case, and I could get 3 months jail. So I went to jail for 10 days, and this is the story with Madeline's candlesticks. Hilda, you may remember this when Mother, you and Heshy came from Europe. You were 6 years old and Harry 17 months old, and we lived in Yonkers in our first apartment in Klein's house. Harry was playing outside and Mother was in the house, and she thought the kids was in the rooms, and she called him and no answer, and she ran down in the street and he isn't there. So Mother and Mrs. Klein ran all over and couldn't find him. And Mrs. Klein said to Mother, let's go to the police station to report Harry is missing. And they both ran to the police station. When they came in, sure enough, the kid is there. And a woman policeman holds him in her arms, and he ate an apple. So he sees Mother, and he starts to cry, but it took a nice couple of hours and all. You could imagine the worries Mother went through until he was found, and he couldn't talk, and the police couldn't find out from him anything. Poor Mother, she went through plenty. Okay, we're on the very last two pages, which is Pop's last story. I forgot to write the time when Sarah, Hilda, and Harry came to the U.S. in December 1920. I was working in Yonkers, and Sarah had my address to Uncle Abraham Briller in Brooklyn, and Sarah, on her way to the U.S., she stopped off in Manchester, England, to visit her brother and family. In 1920 was the war between the communist Russia and Poland, and I was afraid to send the traveling papers to Poland, so I sent $1,000 to Sarah's brother. He was afraid to send the traveling expenses to Poland. So I sent $1,000 to Sarah's brother in Manchester, and they got the tickets in Manchester on the SS Magistrate. The Magistrate arrived, but there's no Sarah and no children.
I think it's Majestic, but that's okay.
Majestic, on the SS Majestic, you're right. It arrived, but there's no Sarah and no children, and now I had to wait for an answer from Manchester. I sent a cable to Sarah's brother, and the next day I received an answer. Sarah and the children will arrive with the boat Portland. I was looking all over and asked all the ship companies when the Portland will arrive, and the answer was there is no boat by the name Portland, but there is a Portland, Oregon.
And it was also a Portland, New Hampshire.
A Portland, Maine.
A Portland, Maine.
But they told them Portland, Oregon.
Well, they told them Portland.
Right. So I had to wait and hope to hear from her. I gave Uncle Abraham my telephone where to reach me in Yonkers, and on a Saturday afternoon I received a call. My wife and the children are by Uncle Briller. I rushed to Brooklyn and took them by taxi to Yonkers. I had prepared rooms for us, so in about 1.5 years later, I went in business in Yonkers. Sarah had a trunk with her, with all the belongings, and it got lost on the way coming here. In 2 years later, the trunk was found. That's the end of Gramps' memoirs, but Grandma arrived in Portland, Maine.
Portland, Maine.
And that's what caused all the confusion.
And can you imagine? She stepped off the boat and there was nobody there to greet her.
And no English. And two little children.
She spoke no English, right? She had these two babies.
I hope you all enjoyed hearing this and will forgive me and understand how difficult it is to have read the manuscript, but I hope it is helpful to you to understand. Obviously, to all of us, Papa Jake was an unusual person, and you have a tremendously wonderful heritage.
And I have an anecdote to relate, which has to do with when Papa Jake was working in Yonkers back during the Depression. This is just before he bought the bakery in Peekskill. During the Depression, workers were allowed to take home enough bread and rolls for their family each night. And Papa Jake would come home with a bag of bread and rolls, which of course we could never finish. Now there happened to be on Fifth Street on the Lower East Side where we lived, on the corner there was a church which had a soup kitchen. And they were unemployed, lined up all the way back to our house, which is halfway down the block. I or my brother or my sister were given whatever bread or rolls were left over, put in a bag, and we were to approach the very first person in the line that we came to, simply hand them the bag and walk away. This was what my father had us do. So that's what you call a mitzvah.
Well, that's the highest form of charity.
Yes, the highest form of charity, which is to do it totally anonymously, and that person that we used to give the bread or the bag to would take it and immediately leave and go home to his family.
Well, the highest form is that you nobody asked you, and you give it anonymously.
You give it anonymously.
Which Pop did his whole life over and over again.
It's typical of what my father did. Enjoy it. In thinking about some of this taping having to do with World War I, I mentioned that probably heard me say maybe Pop was a prisoner of war. In fact, he was not a prisoner of war. When he was stationed in Rzeszów, they had Russian prisoners of war. There was some confusion there about who broke through which line, but at that time Germany and Austria, which were allied, opposed to Russia and the American allies, they were ahead in the war, so that they actually had Russian prisoners of war. It was not that Pop was a prisoner of war. I just wanted to get that thing straight. Okay? All right, there's one other part of history I think you ought to know, and that is that my grandparents, my father's parents, came to the United States back in the 1870 and settled on the Lower East Side on what street was that? On Hester Street, that's right. And they had a bakery on Hester Street. And at that time they had no children. There was some attempt for Grandma to become pregnant. She never could. Medicine in the United States was not as advanced as it was in Europe. So they decided that they ought to go back to Europe where medicine, as I said, was more advanced, and perhaps she could then have children. So they sold their business and went back to Europe around 1870. Grandpa was born, well, probably 1880. Grandpa was born in Poland in 1883, so there was some success in Poland. But essentially, there was an opportunity for Pop to have been born here in the United States, except for the advances in medicine in Europe. And that's a little anecdote.